Thanks, Michael, and I mean, I very much agree with what Ian has just said about what we know and what we don't know. I'll try and expand. I'm not sure that I would claim that I can answer the questions you raised at the end, but I'll at least try expand a bit on them when I get to them and say what I think we know and what the interesting questions are in a bit more detail. I'm going to begin, although I'll do this fairly rapidly, with a sort of outline of how I see the interaction between policy and economic research on this topic over the last 15 years or so, and in the 2000s, in other words, what happened in the UK since about the mid-1990s that led to this huge expansion in migration to this country, what research contributed to that, and what research has learned from analysing that, and then come on at the end to some of these broader questions which we don't yet have the answers for. Migration wasn't really a big issue in this country politically from about the late 70s to 1997, in the way that it had been in the late 60s and early 70s. And when it was not framed as an economic issue. It was framed as an issue primarily about race and some of the social issues that followed on from that. And as a consequence, there were relatively few economists who actually worked in this field in this country, and there was very little quantitative analysis. When I came to the subject as a civil servant in about 1999, we could find maybe one or two papers that actually did quantitative analysis of the impacts of migration on the UK economy or labour market. We really knew very little indeed. And when we in government tried to set out and fill that gap, we didn't fill it through doing quantitative analysis, but at least tried to describe what was going on, and to describe the fact that there was clearly something going on in the UK, and especially in London. In the late 1990s, there was a regime shift of some sort in terms of what was happening, both in terms of migration flows and in terms of the way that the policy framework facilitated those flows. And there's one sort of ex post analysis produced by Will Somerville, I think many of you will know, writing for IPPR, and a sort of post mortem of the first 10 years of the Labour government, said that what happened in the late 1990s, early 2000s, was really a comprehensive change of policy towards migration, in particular economic migration, and that the previous policy model of benign or malign, depending on your perspective, neglect, was replaced with a framework which was much more proactively looking at the way in which migration could have positive impacts on the UK economy. And that led to a period of really very rapid policy development that was very much informed and developed in conjunction with economists inside and outside government. And these are a few of the really big policy changes that took place, particularly in the early 2000s. The work permit system was modernized, reformed, streamlined, made much more business friendly, much more presumption that businesses ought to be allowed to hire workers from outside the EU if they wanted. A program called the Highly Skilled Migrant Program, which allowed people with some qualifications to come here without necessarily having a job to go to, was introduced for pretty much the first time. Was the framework for international students liberalized, but universities were very much encouraged to recruit international students, both because it was seen as a way of alleviating the pressure on university finances and hence on the public finances, but also because it was perceived to have wider positive economic spin-offs, and that in turn led to an expansion of the post-study work route under which students were allowed to stay on and work after graduation. And then, of course, the biggest single policy change or policy development of all which was a decision to give unrestricted labour market access to nationals of Poland, the Baltics, and the Baltic states in particular, when they joined the European Union in 2004. You can see how the policy framework changed. Now, you know, I mean, there are various lots of little rule changes which went into this huge expansion of the work permit system, and it's quite difficult to separate out which precisely drove what. But there's no doubt that it's huge. We had about 30 to 40,000 people a year coming here on work permits in 95 to 97. By 2002-2004, this is pre-EU accession. The government was giving well over 100,000 work permits to people outside the European Union every single year. That's a pretty big shift. Then came labour market access for the AA. Here I do always try and nail one particular myth, which is was driven by the decision to grant access was driven by a forecast from academics at UCL that the numbers would be very small. I think it goes much wider than that. It does need to be seen not in the context of one particular set of economists producing a gravity model which spat out a number and ministers just saying, oh, okay, that's all right then, we'll liberalise immigration policy on that basis. It was driven by a set of drivers which are really, I think, say quite a lot about the trade-offs and challenges that migration policymakers face. And first was, and this is often forgotten, although perhaps we've been reminded it over the last week, was a political and foreign policy. The AA countries were allowed to join the European Union in large part because the United Kingdom wanted them to and expended a great deal of diplomatic capital in enabling them to come, and that was particularly the case with Poland. The previous Tony Blair had a close relationship with various Polish politicians. He wanted them in the EU. We and the British foreign policy establishment in general thought this was a big win for the UK, and they would be a big ally for us in years to come in various debates within the European Union. That broadly proved to be true. And the downside of forgetting that has been apparent in the last week with the reported remarks of the Polish foreign minister, who really ought to be one of the UK's closest allies in Europe across a whole range of debates about liberalisation, about the single market, about foreign policy, and so on. And yet we've managed to comprehensively alienate him because of a perfectly reasonable complaint about things like child benefit going to Poland, but really not a big issue in the wider foreign policy scheme of things. And I think, you know, that illustrates the fact that you can't separate out these immigration policy debates from some of the wider geopolitical issues. The second, this is even more forgotten, is an administrative and practical consideration, and again, this has a lot of resonance for current debates. We did not have the option of saying to Polish people, oh, you can't come here on May 1st, 2004. They became a member of the European Union. Free movement means they were entitled to come here without any border controls. The question was whether we were going to let them work here legally. And the strong view of most people was that in a relatively flexible, relatively lightly regulated labour market, where we don't have a huge corps of labour inspectors going around, Poles and others would come. The question was whether, and they would work. The question was whether they would work legally or work illegally. And again, that's often forgotten in some of the debates about this. And finally, the more economist view that the economic labour market impacts were likely to be benign. But it's undoubtedly true that the flows were considerably bigger than anticipated. This is a pretty dramatic graph, I think. This is UK as a whole. You would probably see something pretty similar for London, with the numbers being about three times as big, I would guess. This shows the proportion of the UK's working age population that's made up by immigrants, and you can see that dramatic takeoff. So what did we know about the impacts of this migration? I'll skip over some of this because Ian has summarised it as well. There's been quite a bit of now of econometric analysis of the labour market impacts hasn't found much in the way of significant negative impacts, and that's become conventional wisdom pretty much. Sadly, there hasn't been the sort of detailed program evaluation of these specific policy changes that allow particular types of immigrants in, which would have answered some of Ian's very sensible questions about the heterogeneity. So, you know, we can look at the overall impact of immigrants on the labour market, or even some very big subgroups. We cannot look at, say, unfortunately, at, say, the people who come through the highly skilled migrant program, who are a very interesting group. And you can have wildly different views on whether they're likely to have had a large positive impact, a small positive impact, or even a negative impact on various indicators. Yet we haven't done that, and we haven't had the data to be able to do that. And that unfortunately is a real shame. There was this huge upsurge of research on labour and economic impacts. That's the list of the papers. This is my attempt to sum it up in one chart. Because most of the papers do find something like this. This is from one of my papers, but it doesn't really matter. Is that when you look at labour market impacts in the standard way, which is to graph some indicator of labour market outcomes like unemployment or employment against the immigrant inflows, gross or net, you find a bunch of dots that tell you basically there's no relationship at all, and you draw a line through it and it's pretty much flat. And you can then fiddle around with lots of fancy econometrics and it still ends up telling you pretty much the same thing, which is that there isn't much of a big impact at the if you look at immigrants as a homogenous group, and if you look at impacts as these sort of headline indicators. So where does that leave us stand? Let's say I think there's a consensus, there's little or no impact on unemployment. In other words, immigrants create about as many jobs as they take. As Ian said, some relatively small negative impact on wages at the bottom of the distribution, quite possibly bigger in London because there are more and because the impact on the structure of the labour market is greater. Impact on public service is fully significant. As Ian says, benefit tourism is largely mythical, but there clearly is a big impact on public services, in particular schools and hospitals in London. Again, it's both on the supply side and the demand side. It's both on tax revenues, on public expenditures. What the balance is, I think, is quite difficult to assess, and perhaps that's not really, although there's been quite a bit of talk about it, it's probably not actually the most interesting question. There has recently been some stuff on long-term fiscal impacts, both by the Office of Budget Responsibility and by Katerina Lisinkova, who works for me at NESER, which suggests that there are, in the grand scheme of things, I mean, very dramatic numbers, tens and billions of pounds, several percent of GDP over very long periods, which look quite dramatic, although I would regard these, over the sort of periods we're talking about, these are still fairly modest impacts compared to other things that are going on in the economy over a 30 or 40 year period. Let me skip on to this then. So leaving aside this analysis of labour market impacts, what are the more interesting questions about the impacts on economic structures, on innovation, productivity, and so on, that you can think about if you think about immigration not just as being a lump of workers possibly with a particular educational level to an economy. How does immigration or particular types of immigrants actually change the structures of production? And there are a bunch of different ways in which you might imagine that immigration might impact on some of these other more complicated indicators. And here is a list of them. It goes, and some of these relate very clearly to the analogous discussion in the economics literature about the wider impacts of trade. When is trade not just about comparative advantage? So, for example, we tend to think that the benefits of trade with the European Union do not come mostly because of comparative advantage. It's not clear that we versus the French or Italians have a comparative advantage in making cars or vice versa. What we think, though, is that because of the the increased competitive pressures that have applied both to our car industry and the Italian and French and German ones over the last 20 years, all of us have become considerably more efficient, and there's a fair, actually, plenty of economic literature which demonstrates that. Is that true of immigration as well? Well, there are certainly ways in which it might be the case. There are spillovers and complementarities in the operation of human capital. It's not just about adding more skilled workers, but also the possible interaction between workers with different characteristics or different skills. A lot has been written, and not my subject, about transnational networks, both mostly on the positive side, but there are also obviously potentially negative impacts of transnational networks, which we can all think of. There are effects around the segmentation of labour markets, which I think Ian sort of in principle alluded to, particularly the bottom end of the labour market. We understand very little about this. Why is it that most parking attendants, this is the example I tend to use, most parking attendants, at least in my part of North London, appear to be West African?
And in Berkshire.
And in Berkshire. Why is this happening? Is it a good thing? Many of them, from what one reads, appear to be relatively well educated and probably doing jobs that they are not terribly happy doing and are overqualified for. What's going on here? What are the wider impacts of that sort of thing? And there are other labour markets in London where that appears to happen. So there are plenty of very interesting research questions here, which some of the sort of aggregate econometric analysis doesn't tell you the answer to. Okay. So what evidence do we have so far? This is just a list of some of the papers that attempt to address some of these type of questions, both in the UK and abroad, about these broader, not direct labour market. There's been, as Ian alluded to, a number of stuff by Jennifer Hunt and others in the US on immigration and innovation and patenting, looking at innovation as measured by a number of patents and seeing whether that's associated with immigration, particularly high-skilled immigration or particularly immigration for study and thereafter. Max Nathan, who's both here and at NISA, has done some similar stuff, again looking at ethnic or diversity, particularly in management or the founders of a company, on patents. And again, and this finds sort of suggestive evidence. Do we really believe it? Are patents really a good measure of innovation? We're not entirely convinced about any of that, but there is the beginnings of some suggestive evidence there. Similarly on productivity, Shinzia Rienzo, at NISA has looked at the association between immigration or immigrants within sector region level and productivity change. Again, this shows some suggestive evidence of a positive association without real decent firm level data on immigrant shares, which we don't really have, certainly not on a longitudinal basis in this country yet. It's quite difficult to conclude anything here about causality. Obviously, anecdotally, we note that lots of high growth, high productivity sectors are in London. Lots of those sectors employ lots of immigrants. Lots of those companies in those sectors will tell you that they're very much dependent on immigrants and regard the diversity of the backgrounds of their staff as an important asset. Can we show that quantitatively, and can we describe how policy change might influence that positively or negatively? It's very tough. Immigration in London schools, the remarkable success, at least as measured by quantitative outcomes, test scores and so on, of London schools is really one of the most interesting social policy developments in the UK in the last 15 years. I understand that London is now the only capital city in the developed world where students significantly outperform the rest of the country. That's particularly true for disadvantaged students. A lot has been now, success has many fathers. Perhaps Michael indeed would claim a little bit of credit himself, directly or indirectly, because many would argue that Tower Hamlets is a where Michael used to work is a particularly notable example of this transformation. It clearly has something to do with immigration. It clearly has something to do with lots of other things that were going on the policy environment in education over this period. There has been research by Sandra McNally and the Institute for Fiscal Studies and Simon Burgess have all recently written on this, and I don't think we have a definitive answer, but it's difficult to think that immigration and diversity doesn't have something to do with it interacting with some of these other policy aims. And then finally, at a macro level, what do we know about immigration and productivity? Well, there have been some recent papers, notably one by Giovanni Perry at UC Davis and his co-authors, which suggest positive impacts. This is quite, again, similar to the trade literature. I'm not a great believer in cross-cutting regressions myself. But again, as a sort of stylized fact, the association of, at least in some countries, with high levels of immigration with high levels of GDP, per capita GDP growth, and certainly in the UK, between London's outperformance and London's dependence on immigration is notable. So where does that leave us? As I said, I think it leaves us with a huge research agenda, which is certainly advanced quite a bit on where it was 5 years ago, but we're still scratching the surface of some of these very much more complicated assessments of the impact. Just to conclude, I was, as part of this program, I think I came to a smaller round table here at LSE, which was talking about the impact. The headline was something like the impact of migration on London or something. And, I said, it's very difficult to think about that as a question. You can think about the impact of immigration on Berkshire, maybe, or on Devon. You've got 5% of the population or whatever. At the moment, London is immigration, and immigration in this country is London. You cannot separate out the two. You can just try and trace some of these connections. And as I said, I think it's a fascinating topic, and there's plenty of scope for more interesting and more sophisticated research.